Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about car repair. We're going to talk about some shops in the valley selling. We're going to talk about pricing issues with respect to shop supplies, environmental charges, labor rates, stuff like that. And we can answer all those kinds of questions, but if you have a car question, you can do that as well. But first, let me tell you about Action Auto Repair at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom owns a full-service, family-owned operation, been around since 1983, and I've known him before 1983. So Tom and I didn't meet yesterday, and he's not all of a sudden on my list of best shops. He's been around, so have I. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. They know what to do. They know how to do it. And they know if they take a left turn and they should have taken a right turn, they know how to adjust for that. So Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. If you live up in that area, it's a good place to go. We have two callers. We have Joan and Leonard. I'm going to get to you in about 30 seconds. The rest of you, the lines, we have three lines open, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. It's a live show. You're going to be on the air. You're going to ask me your question. Give me your make and model. Tell me what the question is or what the symptom is or what you've been told or something like that. Joan, good morning. Ladies first, how can I help you?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a 2005 Toyota Camry. Up until now, I've used the conventional oil. I like to go to the full synthetic oil like AMS oil or Mobil 1 to extend the life of the engine. If for some reason I want to go back to conventional oil, would that be bad for the engine?
The engine is not going to know any difference, and forgive my analogy, but your motor wouldn't know the difference between peanut butter, shaving cream, Coca-Cola, and anything else that people have put inside their engine. So now, let me ask you a question. Why do you want to do that?
Well, to make the car last longer.
Okay. Now, do you know right now you're probably going in every 3,000 miles for an oil change?
Right. Well, the manual says 5,000.
Okay, fair enough. You might be the first person this month I've heard refer to the manual. Okay, 5,000. Now, you know on a synthetic you can go 10, 12, 15 if you want. How many miles a year do you drive?
Not very much. I have under 100,000 miles on the car.
Okay.
I get 12,000 a year.
Okay. You could go on an annual oil change. You could change it like every May at the beginning of the summer, once a year, and you could use a synthetic oil. But let me just chime in on what you said initially. You said, I'm going to go to synthetic, hopefully, to make my car last longer.
The engine.
Yes, ma'am. I want to tell you that of all the engines that we do on a regular basis, every single one of them failed because of someone who had their hands on the steering wheel. Somebody ran it low on oil. Somebody drove it another 10 miles after it was in full overheat. When we see engines fail, I can't tell you. It's a 1 to 100 ratio. One engine out of 100 simply wears out. The other 99, somewhere along the line, were abused or weren't cared for properly, and they ended up failing. So there's no guarantee. I'll give you a good example. Let's say you're on your way up to Flagstaff to visit a friend of yours, and it's in the middle of the summertime, and you're about 11 miles away, and all of a sudden the needle goes to the red, and you think, okay, well, I'm just going to go ahead and drive to her house. When you get to her house 11 miles later, the motor's going to be gone. So you did that. If you had just pulled over, called for road service and all that kind of jazz, your motor probably would have survived. I'm 90% sure of that, because 90% of them that come in on an overheat, as long as they weren't driven until the motor melted, we can put them back together. And most of the time, it's just fix the leak, flush the cooling system, put a new cap on it, put a new thermostat on it, send them on their way. So there's no guarantee that you going to a full synthetic is going to make it last longer. I suggest you got two choices. You can go a little longer oil change with the synthetics. It's going to cost you a little bit more. The synthetic's going to be over $100. This conventional oil is going to be under 50. So the under 50 one, you can go 5,000 miles with no problem. And, of course, with the $100 one, you can go 10,000 miles, 12,000 if you want. So I'm not quite sure that I agree with what you're trying to accomplish, because my bet would be you're no spring chicken, neither am I. And I doubt very seriously if you're going to be hot rodding your Camry. I doubt very seriously you're going to drive it another 20 miles after steam comes billowing out from underneath the hood. And I'm quite sure that if the motor starts knocking, you'll hear it and shut it off. Those are the excuses the other people use when they bring their cars in on a tow truck and the motor has been melted. Does that make sense?
So when it goes to the red light, says car engine needs maintenance, or when it starts knocking, then you've got engine problem and just turn it off.
The maintenance is a number that the computer gives you based on mileage and what we call an algorithm. The computer's watching how you drive, how many short trips, how many long trips, how many fast 60 miles an hour, how many 10 miles an hour, how many times did you start it up and not really warm it up, how many times did you start it up and warmed it up good. So that maintenance thing is just nothing more than, I think you're due for an oil change. That's what it's about. That's all it is. It has nothing to do with the failure of the engine. The failure of the engine in Arizona, you're going to run it low on oil, and the red light's going to come on, and people say, oh, I thought I could drive another 7 miles home. Well, they don't make it 7 miles, because when the oil light comes on, it's red. Red means stop. And so as a result, they just ruin the engine. It's the same way with an overheat. With an overheat, your gauge swings all the way into the red zone. Your needle in your temperature gauge, your engine temperature gauge, goes all the way past the orange and into the red, and you ignore that, and you ignore the steam that's coming billowing out of the hood. You ignore the car is knocking like crazy, and you try to make it home. That gets towed in, and we end up putting a motor in that one, too. So if you it's just a matter of money. One's $30 to $50. The other one is $100 plus. That's the oil changes. And it's also a matter of oil change intervals. Do you have any idea how many miles a year you drive?
I think it's 10,000, 12,000,
okay.
Maybe.
All right. You could do that with a synthetic oil. You could have it done today, and then you wouldn't need an oil change until next October. So you could do that if you wanted to. If that suits you, you'll just have to reset your maintenance minder, because it thinks you're on conventional oil, and it thinks you're on a 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change. So
my car wouldn't sense any difference from the conventional to the part synthetic to the full synthetic.
Nope. Your car won't know the difference. It doesn't have a brain. All it's doing is monitoring a bunch of different sensors, and if one of the sensors goes out of parameter, boop, it turns on a light to tell you that. But your car, it doesn't look at the oil you have in your car and say, oh, she's got the cheapest oil in the world. Let's all fail at 80,000 miles. that doesn't happen. The car doesn't know what kind of oil.
I heard the oil is cleaner after it's been in the car. You've driven it for 3,000 miles. It's a cleaner. It comes out cleaner. It doesn't have the combustion particles in it like the conventional oil would have.
Okay, that's not true, and let me explain why. All oil, whether it's conventional, semi-synthetic, or synthetic, they all have detergent in them. Now, it's not scrubbing bubbles. What it means is, I want you to picture a big glass of water, and you take a small piece of carbon and you just drop it into the water, and the carbon will slowly waffle all the way to the bottom of the glass. Okay? It's heavier than the water, so it's just going to fall to the bottom. Detergent isn't scrubbing bubbles. The detergent in the oil will hold that little piece of trash in suspension in the oil, and the next time that gulp of oil goes through the filter, the filter will grab that little piece of trash. So detergent is not a scrubbing bubble issue. It holds all the trash, the little pieces of metal that are microscopic, small pieces of metal that are half the thickness of an eyelash hair, little pieces of carbon, little pieces of aluminum, whatever. The car sheds metal its whole life, and it's no big deal. It's going to do that. So detergent holds that and sends it to the filter. So I'm a little suspect on anybody who says that they use an oil and after 3,000 to 5,000 miles, it still has a golden hue. it still has a golden hue, because that's just BS. The oil, in order to work right, has to change colors because it's picking up all this trash, and most of it's black. So I don't buy the idea that it's going to come out as a golden hue, but you could try it, and if I'm wrong, just give me a call. And maybe I even come over and look at it, but I've never seen it before, and I've been working on cars since 1973. So anyway, good luck to you, Joan. Thank you very much. That was a great question. Leonard, you're up. How can I help you?
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Yeah, I got an O2 Buick, and I did get a check engine light this time. Because I replaced a vapor canister about 4 months ago. This time I got a service engine light. The service, I go to go all car store. I talked to three service kids, and I put in all the information, and it comes out with the odometer reads 66,000 miles. So it's then you put in it. It says no diagnostic code was found. No diester code were found. No solution found.
So you have a, Leonard, hold on. You have a check engine light, but there's no codes?
No, it doesn't. Not a check engine. It's a service engine light is what they came on. Service engine light.
Oh, service engine not soon light. That's
service engine light.
Okay. SES light. So it's you have an SES light, but there's no codes behind it.
Right.
Okay. And where did, when somebody checked the codes, how did they check the codes, Leonard?
Well, they put the device in there under the dashboard there.
Okay.
And it says, no solution was found.
Okay. Okay. In that case, I'd probably disconnect the negative cable, and I would let it sit there for 20 minutes or so, and then I'd reconnect the negative cable, and you'll have to reset your clock, of course. That clears everything and starts everything brand new, and then I'd drive it again. But, Leonard, that's very unusual for us to have an SES light on or a check engine light. They're both the same and have no codes behind it. The only possibility is that after the computer sees something wrong, not once, not twice, not even four times, five, six, seven times it turns on the light. Then it will watch it. And if five or six times later, then it goes out, then the light should go out and the code's gone. So I don't know what to tell you. But what I would do is disconnect the negative cable, let it sit for a while, put it back on, and let's see what happens. But it's very unusual for us not to have codes behind the SES light. And the only thing I can think of is perhaps maybe the connection between the scanner of the person that was gathering the codes and the car wasn't connected tight or whatever. But I don't know, Leonard. I wasn't there, so I don't know. All I can do is guess. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington. I've known Phil for many years, but he's been in the transmission business for probably 40 years or more. Actually, more than that. It's 1968. So Phil's been around, and he has transitioned from the very first 2 and 3 speed automatic transmissions all the way to the 6, 7, and 8 speed electronic transmissions, and he can do them all. So if you have a transmission-related problem, and the very best thing to do is learn how to make it happen, so when you go to the transmission store, transmission shop, you can demonstrate the problem. Telling them that it has a hiccup every Thursday at 2 o'clock is going to be difficult. We need symptoms, and we just admire people who can make it happen with us sitting either in the driver's seat or in the passenger seat and watching them. So that's Phil at Automatic Transmission Exchange. Okay, so what's going on in Phoenix and the Valley right now? There's a lot of shops that are being sold. There's a couple of large companies that have come into town, and they've purchased some tire stores. They've purchased general repair stores. They've purchased performance stores and some specialty shops. And there's a lot of happy owners because these people paid a lot of money. And what we're seeing as a result of this is we're seeing labor rates starting to climb, sometimes dramatically. And we're starting to also see the costs associated with technicians rising, because when they came in, according to technicians that work for these shops, that they gave them a significant raise. And as a result of that, it's raised the entire market up as well. It's never really been a situation where technicians made more than $25, $35, $45 an hour, maybe a little bit more than that. Today I'm told, and I've had face-to-face conversations with technicians that are being paid $100 and $125 an hour. If the shop rate therefore has to be like $170 to $200, and we're also seeing those. When it comes to shops, I have been in my geographical area of my shop, which is in Tempe. We've drawn about a 5-mile circle around us, and there's plenty of dealerships in that circle. And we are constantly monitoring their labor rates so that we can be appropriately listed as well. I'll tell you right now, I want to be at the 60% mark, maybe even the 70% mark. So if everybody's at $100 an hour, or if the average is at $100 an hour, I want to be 70% of that. And so I don't want to be the top guy, and I don't want to be the bottom guy. So I'm pretty happy to be somewhere in the 70%. On the other hand, right now what we're seeing is we're seeing really good technicians shopping for a better deal than the one that they have. And it's okay. It happens, and I expected it to happen, but it's going to affect you, the end user. You're going to, if you do different stores, there was some tire shops. There was an antique and vintage car facility, and there's been some general repair shops. And many of these guys that are friends of mine had multiple stores. This all got started when Sun Devil sold, I think, 28 stores a year or so ago. And so the Sun Devil stores are still good stores. They're still, if you go to them and you like them and they treat you right, yes, you should stay there. But the family sold all their stores in one whack to a very large group of investors. And so now those investors, that and another one, are now in the valley again looking at a lot of other places. So you're going to see some changes. And I think for the most part they're going to be good changes. But I do think that you're going to see a rise in our industry with respect to labor rates and parts costs. And I think it's going to be pretty much across the board because most of us follow the trends. So if all of a sudden you're at $100 an hour and everybody else is at $150 an hour, you would probably understand if I told you, if I was at 100 and everybody was at 150, I'd be at a 120, 135, maybe 140, maybe 145. I wouldn't go over the 150 mark, but I'd tuck myself kind of close to it so that I could defend my position. But by the same token, how much I spend for my parts has everything to do with my volume. So the more parts I buy, the cheaper I buy them. The cheaper I buy them, the cheaper I sell them to you. Because it's no secret that we just want a percentage of profit on the part. So if we buy it for $20, then we're going to sell it to you for somewhere between, I don't know, $30, $40, $50, depending on what our matrix says. So it's a situation that right now everything is in turmoil. Not everything, but everything in my world is in turmoil. I know that our family's not going to sell, and we're going to stay a family-owned operation, and I know lots of other shops have made the same claim. But in their defense of the guys that sold, the guys and the women and families that sold, in their defense, it's something that you kind of hope for as you get to retirement age. And a lot of the guys that sold these shops were my friends, and we're all of the same age. We're all in the 60s and 50s, 60s, and 70s. And there's probably a couple guys out there that are in their 80s. So it's okay that they sold their shop. And initially the shop was purchased, then they came back and bought the land too. And so there's a lot of them that say, I can't tell you how much, but I'm getting rent off land that I owned. And that supplements my Social Security, my 401k, my annuities, or whatever else I have going. So that's a good thing for those guys. I'm just a little concerned about the car repair for the next year with respect to prices for labor and prices for parts. There's no reason for us to double or triple the price of parts because that's not happening where we buy them. That's happening when we sell them. And so it's not going to be a bloodbath. It won't be that. It's going to be something that will be pretty cyclical. It'll go up and then it'll go down and go up and go down. And my daughter said just the other day she did two back-to-back surveys, and there's already a couple of shops that have backed away from the big dog hourly rates of $180 to $200 an hour and so forth and so on. There's a whole lot of people between $100 and $150 and $150 and $175, but there's very few people that are north of the $75, or there was very few people. But now we're going to be up in that area. And we follow the one another, and I'm not the only guy in town that follows the curve. And it's not tough. We hire some ASU students to just do a labor survey for us. Here's 50 places. Call them up and just say to them, I'm doing a survey for my ASU class I have, and would you tell me what your labor rate is? Tell me what your mechanical rate is. Tell me what your paint and body rate is. Tell me what your transmission rate is. Typically, the mechanical covers all that, but then there's also paint and body, and then there's also specialty shops that do the vintage work and the classic work. And those guys are typically well over $200 because there's so few of them out there. So we're going to see this kind of movement, and it's going to cost a little bit more to get your car fixed. But if you go inside and you don't recognize a lot of people, then it's a possibility that they've sold. And that is not reason enough to abandon the shop, because the people that are in there are the same people that were in there when you did business with them. So it's the same technicians, the same parts people, the same cleanup people, the same service writers, the same general manager. Those are all probably still there. So if they've been good to you, then hopefully they'll continue to watch out. And when you walk in, they say, oh, that's Mrs. Jones. She's been a customer of ours for 30 years. So if there's anybody from the administration side standing around and says, well, what about, why did you give her such a good deal? Usually that's the discussion. That's the conversation. Because she's been a customer of ours since 1970. And her husband and so-and-so's husband were best of friends, that kind of thing. And that's how it goes on. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines available if you have a car question or a problem, or if you have a discussion, or if you have a dispute with somebody about he says this and I say this, then give us a call, 602-508-0960. Well, it's 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to go till noon, which is another hour and a half, and we're going to talk about cars and anything to do with cars or motorhomes, tires, gasoline. How can I get the best fuel economy? You know how you could get the best fuel economy of anybody in your family or anybody you know? Just one way. You get a raw egg and you tape it to the throttle pedal and you don't break the egg. Now, you can't hard boil the egg because that's not fair. But if you were to drive as if you had a raw egg taped to the throttle pedal, you would enhance your fuel economy by at least a third and maybe by half, because your drive. Another thing to do is put a tall, tall glass of the hottest water you can find in between your legs and drive, and don't hold on to it. Just hold on to it with your legs and don't spill any of it, and you have to fill it all the way to the top. So you're getting the idea that I'm trying to put in your head. Just drive like, you know, you have a cold glass or a hot cup of coffee on your knee. Don't spill it and drive that way. Drive sensible. Okay, Stephen, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I've got a 96 DeVille, and it started, and I backed up a car length. It ran poorly and died. Then I waited, and it started again, did the same thing. And then I tried again, and it wouldn't start.
Okay.
So I waited a day or so. I charged the battery, and it wants to start, and you can hear a clicking noise from the rear.
Okay.
And I'm curious, is this a fuel pump type problem, or
not a clicking problem? The fuel pump inside the fuel tank, you can actually put your hand on it and sometimes feel it. Sometimes you can take the gas cap off. There should be a humming noise or a humming feeling on the bottom of the tank. So the clicking on the back of the car is not. The relay's in the front underneath the hood anyway. So if there's any clicking going on in the fuel pump in the tank, it'd be up front.
It would be up front.
The clicking would be up front, yes. So,
okay.
This is an easy, I can't diagnose it for you, but you're missing spark or fuel. If you're missing fuel, then the relay could be bad, fuel pump relay. And you know what you could do is if you want to take the cover off the fuse panel, and there's probably going to be more than one relay in there. They're little square boxes. And if you find a relay for the windshield wipers and you find a relay for the fuel pump, switch them. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Just switch them. And if it starts and runs and everything's fine, then you have a bad relay. But most of the time the relay is bad because the fuel pump is drawing too much amperage. It's old, it's tired, and it's using too much electricity, so it takes the relay. So if you put a new relay in it, there's a 50-50 chance that it'll happen again. The other thing is no spark. So it won't start because of no fuel or no spark. The spark is the crankshaft sensor, the ignition control module, the pickup assembly. But both of those are pretty easy to diagnose. So it's not something that you have to fret over. If you have it towed in by your local auto, whatever, and you have it towed in, you just say it's a crank but no start, call me with an estimate.
All right. You've got a better ideas.
Yeah.
Something like what a backyard mechanic would come up with.
Well, I'm a little concerned you just going in a direction that I know that 90% of the crank but no starts are spark or fuel. I know.
Okay. Now, I'm close to a shop on 16th Street in Missouri.
Okay.
Are you familiar with that one?
Is it Dave?
I think it's Tony.
Okay.
Are you any familiar with that shop?
16th Street and what?
Missouri.
No, I do know Tony, and I know Tony Guido, but his shop is at 56th and Thomas.
56th and Thomas.
Yeah. And
the shops I've been going to, I'm sure, is been sold, and I'm not confident there anymore.
Okay, I don't know
I'm looking for somewhere. I'm around 7th Street in Missouri. Have you got any friends or anybody you might recommend?
Sure. The car repair shop, or the car shop, is on 12th Street and. My mind just went blank because of the car repair shop. Well, Martin, look at Martin's Auto. He's on 16th Street. Martin's Auto. I know he's a good guy. You'll know you meet Dave because Dave is in a wheelchair, and he's run that business ever since his father
Martin
retired.
Martin's Auto. Now, where was the address?
16th Street.
16th
it's like Street. Thomas and Indian School, somewhere around there. Martin's Auto.
Okay, that's what I'm looking for.
He's
I sure appreciate your time. God bless you for your help.
Thank you. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you. I'm going to take a break, but Daniel, don't you go anywhere because you're my first caller, so I'm going to say welcome back, everybody. Daniel, how are you? So just stay right there, Daniel. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Real quick, Stephen, I just talked to you about your Cadillac. Martin's Auto Repair is two blocks south of Indian School on 16th Street. Martin's Auto Repair is on 16th Street and Camelback, or 16th Street and Indian School, two blocks south. And that's the shop that I know does a good job, and you'll meet Dave Martin, and I'm pretty sure he can help you with your crank but no start on your Cadillac. Daniel, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hi. I've had the laugh when you talked about driving with the egg on the accelerator. I do that typically, and it sometimes creates an interesting situation that goes behind. Yeah,
Dave. You're supposed to. Daniel. You're supposed to hard boil it before you. So if you break the shell,
I'm not that swift. May I ask? I've been driving a couple of thousand miles with my airbag light on for the driver's side, and I'm wondering if that can just be reset, or should I have that professionally looked at?
No, just about anybody can do it. Let me explain what's going on. The airbag light means I'm not going to put the airbag in your face if you have a crash. The system is down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a thing called a clock spring that's underneath your steering wheel. Now, one end of the harness that goes to the airbag in your steering wheel, one end of it is secure. It doesn't move. But the other end moves with the steering wheel. So there's this spring called a clock spring. So when you turn left and you turn right, no matter where that steering wheel's at, it's still talking to the airbag module, saying, I'm here, tell me when you want me to pop the airbag. And in your case, more than likely, that clock spring is bad, which means that you diagnose it, you pull the steering wheel off, you replace the clock spring, you put the steering wheel back on, and you're done. So I would have it fixed, because right now, none of the airbags are going to deploy when the airbag light is on.
Yeah. All right. I appreciate that.
Okay. You bet.
I appreciate it.
Good enough.
Thank you so much.
You betcha. Good luck. And my, I got to put down the airbag light on so I remember what Daniel and I talked about. You can go to marksalem.com, and there's lots of information there. There's some FAQs. There's all of the repair shops that I recommend to people, addresses and phone numbers and location and all that kind of stuff, and how long they've been in business and all that other kind of stuff. So if you have any of those, if you have a need for a repair shop, then my marksalem.com is the place I would like you to go and look and see if you can find somebody in your geographical location. It's an interesting concept to, when we start talking about referring to one another, you have to have a pretty good idea that they're going to not throw you under the bus. And I'm proud to say that many of the guys that I refer you to, I've known for 20 years or more. And they're still in business. They're still good guys. They understand right from wrong. And I'm going to knock on wood real loud and tell you, I haven't had a complaint on any of my shops in probably 3 years. Now, people will call and ask me, well, is this fair? Is this fair? Or whatever. That happens. But by the same token, I haven't had anybody call me and just yell at me about their car going into one of my shops that I recommend. So I think that's a pretty good way to handle it. Speaking of those shops, Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted shop as far as I'm concerned. Chuck and his family have owned it since 1982. They do good work. Their staff and mechanics are not paid a commission. They're a percentage of your repair bill, so therefore Chuck can make sure they don't sell you unnecessary parts and repairs. If you're looking for a great shop in Sun City, I can only recommend Automotive Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. On the other side of the world, over there at 40th Street and Greenway, is Tom Blackwell. Tom Blackwell hit his head a long time ago, and ever since then, he's just kind of walked a path all of his own. You can tell we're good friends. Tom has a great shop. He covers that entire northeast, north Scottsdale area for me. 40th Street and Gateway, I should say, 40th Street and Greenway, and he's just a half a block north of Greenway on the west side of the road. He does vintage and classic cars, so if you have an old car that you want to spend a whole lot of thousands of dollars on and put some high-performance fuel-injected monster motor with the blower, he's your guy. But if your wife's 76 Buick needs an oil change, he's your guy. So he has the two different kinds of shops going on. He has what we call street work, which is mom and dad and the grandkids and their cars and all that kind of stuff. And then he's got these hot rods over here. So he does both really well. And if you have any kind of need and you live in that area, then I would suggest that you go to Blackwell Automotive. He's a good guy and he won't let you down. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You're welcome to join us anytime you want. And it's difficult right now in the industry with the shops kind of selling and moving and stuff like that. On one hand, many of us that have been in the business for years and years and years and years have waited and wanted to have the opportunity to have some big company come in and absorb us. You can imagine that. I'm quite sure you can understand that. The problem with that right now is that it's just there's two big companies that have come into Phoenix. And just recently, there was a guy who owned three shops. He threw one into the pot, then somebody else threw his two shops into the pot, and somebody else threw their three shops into the pot, and one company bought them all. And that's okay, but the pricing, at the price they paid for them, the pricing is going to have to go up. And we've already seen a raise in the labor rates. We used to be in the 120, 150 range, generally speaking, for all of Phoenix. And the dealers were at the top end of that, but there was a lot of independents. I was up close to that as well. But now we're seeing numbers of a shop rate of 180 to 220. 180 an hour to 220 an hour. That's going to hurt. It's just because there's a huge movement right now in the auto repair industry, and evidently some financial guys have decided that's a great place to make money, so forth and so on. One of the guys is sold his business to them, and then they paid him rent, and then they sold the land and the building to somebody else. So that shop's had three owners in a period of 6 months. And it's a good shop, and it has good technicians. And I've known the owner for 20 years, and I'm happy for him, but it's just change. And change is tough, and especially in the auto repair industry. It doesn't make any difference to you when it comes to dealers, because dealers change hands a lot. You know, we didn't start off with 20 Earnhardts, and Lou Grubb had a whole bunch of stores and doesn't have any now, and Sanderson has been a real somebody I've admired for years, and he has more stores than he ever had before as well. So some of them are going, some of them are coming, some of them are changing hands, and a lot of times you don't even know that somebody bought the Buick dealership, and you don't even know that it's no longer owned by the same company that you bought your car from. Henry Brown's a good example of that. I bought my very first car from Henry Brown in 1973. It was a 73 Chevy pickup truck. And Henry and I have been friends for years and years and years, but Henry has a variety of other locations in the Valley, and he sells a lot of different branded cars. So Tex Earnhardt's no different. Sanderson's no different. There's a lot of them out there. So it's just something that we've not seen in the auto repair industry. The dealers have sold and stuff back and forth, but independent car shops and chain stores, they haven't been on the market, but they are now. So I'm just warning you to pay attention and listen good, and I would strongly suggest if the estimate's a huge estimate, you ask them to send you a copy of what it entails, what's the parts, what's the labor, and that would allow you an opportunity to bid it if that's what you wanted to do. Who's on the phone?
Say hello to James.
James, good morning.
Mark, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 1998 GMC K2500 with an ABS light that came on, so I took it into a shop to have that repaired.
Okay.
And the front rotors were bad, so we replaced those. The brake pads were bad, so we replaced those. And they broke a speed sensor in the left front. And I said, okay, check the other one. And we replaced that, and I took it for a drive. ABS light came on, the left front, did that pulsating, and steering wheel yanked to the left. That seemed like the only wheel that was breaking. So I took it back, and the ABS light was on. They drove it, said three technicians drove the truck, and they can't get it to do that. So they said, bring it back when the light's on. So I drove it again. And in traffic, that was a real pucker factor. It locked up with that only the wheel pulsating and pulling my wheel.
Wait a minute. You need to stop giving me your diagnosis. Just give me the facts. When you're driving down the road, when you apply the brakes, which one's locking up, left front or right front?
The left front doing that pulsating.
Okay, that's different than locking up. You used the word locked up. Which one was locking up?
Well, the left front squeaks and squeals as if it's
You're applying the brakes
all the way, just applying the brakes to stop at a light.
Okay, so when you're applying the brakes, they're squeaking. Does the brake pedal pulsate?
Yes.
Okay, and so the brake pedal is pulsating, and the left front is making noise that it didn't make before.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right, and this pulsation and that noise you didn't have when you took it in there.
No, okay. No, the ABS light was on, and I had no ABS at all.
Okay, well, that's what it means. ABS lights on. It just means we disabled it, but that doesn't make it pulsate, and that doesn't make it pull hard to the left, and that doesn't make it run out around, and that doesn't make all that things happen. The ABS is ABS. I lost one of the wheel sensors. You got two. You got one in the one in each front and one in the rear. You got three. So I lost sight of the ABS, but you still have normal brakes. So you've gone from a ABS light on to I have abnormal brakes, and you're gonna. I can't believe they just sent you on your way, but I can, and I think I would put the shop on notice that you're gonna take it someplace else and have these issues addressed. And I would also probably notify my bank or the credit card to put a hold on the payment, or put it in dispute, and then that way it'll give you a chance to figure out what happened. But clearly, they've created or gave you problems that you didn't have when you went in there. And they, I don't care that if you have 40 technicians drive it, then they're all ignorant if the brake pedal is pulsating and there's a bunch of noise coming from the left front. So I don't know what they did wrong, but obviously they gave you something you didn't have. Would that be fair?
If it didn't happen to them, I said, I can't take, you know, your technicians with me, because the magic that happened to them doesn't happen to me. I still have a problem. So I said, okay with replacing this sensor that you said you broke. If everything else is replaced, let's finish this. I'm okay with one left sensor. Let's see if the problem then arises, and then I'll do what you said. What?
Well, I don't even agree with you. I don't even agree. I wouldn't let you tell me what to do. I wouldn't want to dance to the music you say. I can get by without one sensor. No, you can't. No, you can't. The ABS light's not going to come on if you lose a wheel sensor in the front. It's not coming on. Or the ABS light will be on and you won't have ABS. It's the brake wobble I'm worried about. The brake wobble, what means that the rotor's not spinning true. Are the wheel bearings good? Have they been tensioned appropriately and packed appropriately? Do we have a bad wheel bearing? Did somebody over-tighten the wheel bearing and wipe out one of the wheel bearings? I think my best advice to you, and I've got a minute left in the show. We'll be back in another. I'll be back for another hour. But my best advice is you need to stop payment or put your credit card on notice, company on notice, and you need to take it someplace else and have them look at it. But stop being involved in the diagnosis and the repair. This is my symptoms. I'll show you. Come with me. I'm going to take you for a ride. I'm going to do it, and then I'm going to have your technician sitting in there, and I'm going to make sure he can make it happen. And that's what I want you to focus on. That's what I want. But I don't agree, and I don't like it when a customer tells me how to fix their car. They just give me the symptoms. That's all I need, symptoms. And I think you're better served by just giving them symptoms and not coming to conclusions about what sensor you need or what you don't. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. We have 5 lines open. You can grab one if you want. Anybody can grab one. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. We'll be back with another hour of Car Talk. All you have to do is give us a call. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. Let me just give you some kind of history real quick, just so that it kind of makes sense to if you're a new listener or if you're a little confused. In 1979, I opened up a gas station in Ahwatukee, and it was a mobile station. And I've been in the car repair business ever since. I have hundreds and hundreds of friends and shop owners that are friends of mine, and I'm friends of theirs. We all get along great. We don't lie about one another. We don't point fingers at one another. And it's not uncommon for me to call a shop and say, hey, I got a customer that's broke down around the corner from you. Can you help me out with them? I think it might be my fault. Maybe it isn't. And they do the same thing to me. So it's a real fraternity of us old guys. And all of us have, if we have hair, it's gray and it's really platinum. We call it platinum, but it's really gray. But there's been a lot of that. But there's been some shops that have sold recently, and big shops and small shops that have sold, and things are changing. Things are changing with respect to the labor rate and how much they're going to charge for parts and how much they're going to pay their technicians, how much they're going to pay in rent. It's going to change a lot. But what I want to tell you is, as a consumer, don't let your husband, ladies, don't let your husband tell you to tell them how to fix your car. That is the worst thing you can do. Give them the symptoms. tell them the symptoms. Better yet, write the symptoms down. I drive down the road. At 15 miles an hour, I gently apply the brake. The steering wheel shakes just a little bit, but it's manageable. At 70 miles an hour, when I apply the brakes to get off on the off-ramp, the whole car shakes. I want you to determine what's causing that and call me with an estimate. That's what we need to do. What we don't want is someone telling us what to fix, because they're going to tell us what to fix, and if it doesn't fix it, it's our fault. We didn't do it right, when it's really their fault because they misdiagnosed their own repair. Women, don't let your husband tell you to tell them what to do. That's just, and there's a lot of us, like we have security cameras in our lobby, and we write down verbatim what the customer tells us to do. And I, maybe once a year that becomes an issue. Well, when you got the security camera, and here's the wife saying, my husband said to replace the front brakes and blah, 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 and replace the lower ball joints, blah, blah, blah. And then they come back in and they goes, well, it's still wearing the tires bad. And we go, nobody told us to look at the tire wear. We were working on brakes and we were looking on lower ball joints. So what, we don't understand how we got to, all of a sudden it's our fault that you have a problem when you didn't even tell us to look at those problems. And so it is kind of difficult, and right now with it being real competitive, we're finding that those kinds of things are happening more often. So try to avoid that. It's not in your best interest. 602-508-0960. If you have a call or question or comment, or if you have a particular symptom you want to discuss on your car, I'm happy to do that as well. I'm an ASE Master Tech and have been since 1991. And I've been around the block a few times, and I also testify as an expert in the government and for insurance companies and in front of many, many judges. So I think I have a little bit more knowledge than the average bear when it comes to car repair. Plus, I've been in the radio business. I was at another station in Phoenix, from 1988 to 2011. And then in 2011, I came to KKNT, and I've been here since then. So as a matter of fact, the 5th of this month will be my 9th year anniversary. 9 or 10? I don't remember. Maybe I got there at 11? Yeah, maybe I got there.
I think it's closer to 10, Mark.
It's 10. Okay, thank you, Gil. It's 10. My anniversary is November 5th. and so I'll be here at this station for 10 years. Kurt's Automotive is a good place. Kurt does both gas and diesel. He has ASE certified technicians. Kurt knows the difference between right and wrong, and I can't tell you how many times Kurt has helped me with a car problem. He's at I-17 and Bell Road. He's been there a long time. And I remember the story goes like this. The lady said, I have a red light on, it's got an oil light on, and they say I need a new engine. And she says, and everyone's giving me estimates $3,000 and $4,000 and $5,000. And that is true for her truck. That was the correct amount. But does it make any clatter? Does it sound the same? Yes, it does. So it doesn't sound like somebody's typing on a typewriter. No, it doesn't. Are there any other lights on? The overheat light? Anything else going on? No. All you've got is an oil light. Yes. Okay, take it to Kurtz. He calls me and he says, it's a $30 oil pressure switch that's bad. It doesn't need an engine. And I said, you better make sure it doesn't need an engine, because you and I are hanging our hat on that. He goes, I already have. I've driven it 30 miles up and 30 miles up down I-17. He said, the light was lying. The light was saying it didn't have any oil pressure because the sender was bad. And I understand that, Kurt, but are you sure? Because I don't want to tell her everything's okay. She says, just tell her it's $30 or something like that. And I said, okay. So this lady was happy, happy, happy that she didn't need an engine that everybody else, well, not everybody, that other shops were bidding for $3,000, $4,000, and $5,000. So Kurt's Automotive, he's a good guy. When it comes to car repair, it's important that your shop play by the rules, and your warranty should be on your repair orders. Most of us have a stamp that we stamp your copy of the repair orders that says 12-12, 24-24, whatever, whatever. So we do that. And make sure that they write down what you tell them at the front counter. It's not a good idea to just tell them you've got three different concerns and have them just look at you and shake their head. Ask them if they would be kind enough to write them down. Or better yet, what we really like is when the customer brings us a piece of paper that they pulled, or they email us their concerns in writing. Oh, gosh, that just works great. That works great, because that makes sure we're all on the same page. So you describe how to make the window not work, or when it doesn't work, what does it do? Does it go up and down slowly? Does it move at all? If you hit the inside of the door panel when you're holding the button to the up position, does the window sometimes go up? And the other day a gentleman said yes. So we say, do you ever have any problem with it going down? No, I don't. Just on the way up. Yes, I do. Sometimes I can't get it up and I have to park it in the driveway with the window down, and that bothers me. Okay, the next time you go to the window and you go up, you push the button forward and you go up, I want you to take your other hand and I want you to strike the inside of the door. See what happens. Do it hard. And he goes, okay. So he calls back and he goes, well, the window went up. No, okay. Well, either the switch is bad or the motor's bad. But one way or another, yes, we can fix it. We just have to determine which one of the two it is. But ironically enough, it turned out to be the motor. But he helped us diagnose it, and he saved himself probably $50, $60 in diagnostic fees. In some shops, let me say this, he saved himself between $50 and $100 in diagnostic fees. That'll cover everybody. So those are the things that we talk about. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. There's 5 lines available. If you'd like to join us, you sure can. 602-508-0960. And especially if the husband and the wife in your family, whether you're the husband or the wife, you have an argument about what you should do right or what you should do wrong or what's good for the car or what's not. I can handle those kinds of marital disputes. There's enough in my family. But when it comes to cars, I'm a well-known expert. When it comes to other stuff, I'm not, and believe me, I'm not. There's a couple of guys on my list that have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, and Larry Harker's has been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen run Larry Harker's Auto. And when you walk in, you're going to meet Ellen because she's at the front counter, and Bob is in the shop and running the shop. And between the two of them, you're going to get a fantastic service and a skilled staff that can diagnose things that most people can't. It's not uncommon for me to send somebody there with some kind of an electrical problem, some brake problem, emissions problem, check engine light, all that kind of stuff. And foreign, domestic, and old car, new car, especially when it comes to emissions because there's two different standards. They can do it all. So I'll tell you the same story I've told. Somebody took a BMW, called me and said, it's leaking water underneath the glove box on the passenger side of the car. I say, what color's the water? It's clear. Are you sure it isn't orange or green or any color? No, it's clear. Oh, and by the way, when you touch it, it's cold. Bingo. I know what it is. Okay. What have you been told? Well, I got an estimate for $1,000 from a BMW shop that said that they needed to do this, and that's what it cost. I said, well, let's just get a second opinion. Run on over to Larry Harker's Auto. Tell Alan that I suggested that you go there, and let's see what they say. They fixed it for, I don't remember, it was less than $150. And their estimate was in the $1,000 range. The problem was is, you guys know that in certain months of the year when the humidity's high and when you park your car, there'll be a puddle of cold water underneath the feet of the passenger. And that's condensation. That's behind the glove box is the cold thing called an evaporator, and we send a refrigerant through it, and then we have a fan behind it. That's how we give you cold air. That's where your air conditioning, the heart of your air conditioning system is behind the glove box. Well, the drain was plugged up. So what was happening was is the tray, instead of the drain bringing it outside the car and dumping it in front of the passenger's feet, it would overflow the tray and go in the car to the floor mat below the glove box. So it was a real easy fix. You just got to clean it out, clean the drain out. So they pulled the carpet back, got that all cleaned up. They went up underneath. They pulled the tray. They pulled the drain out of it. It had a bunch of fuzz and dirt in it. They cleaned that all up. They put a little bit more water in there. Drained just fine. They made sure it drained outside the car. Boom, we're done. So it was easy if you know what you're doing. But obviously, and it could have been that the shop bid a worst case scenario, which certainly could be $1,000 or more. They should have said that, though. The worst case scenario is $1,000. The best case scenario is less than $100. That's your estimate because I can only do that. So anyway, 602-508-0960. When we come back, I'm going to tell you why it's a bad idea to use all kinds of fancy dancy things on your battery terminals. there's people out there, and predominantly the old guys, that put the pads underneath the post, so the cable, and then they put grease all over the cables, or they spray the cables, or they do a lot of stuff. There's lots of hocus pocus when it comes to the battery connections. And when I come back, I'm going to tell you why that's a bad deal. It's not something, we used to do it a lot, but today we don't. Today, the connections need to be clean and tight. That's it. We don't need them painted. We don't need grease all over them. We don't need fancy anti-corrosion spray all over them. We don't need anything like that. And all the newer batteries, certainly for the last 20 years, have terminals that prevent that corrosion and do a good job. So when we come back, we'll talk about that. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about another good shop, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Nate, you just got to meet him to understand why he's such a great guy and well-respected in the industry. First of all, Chevy, Ford, Dodges, some imports. He really understands diesel. He does service and repair and parts, both domestic and foreign light-duty trucks. Light-duty trucks is a key word there. So they sell parts 24 hours a day on their website, strictlydiesel.com. And if you'd like to, you can call Nate. Probably not a good idea on Monday morning or Friday afternoon, but you can call him and he'll call you back if you have a question. So he's pretty good about that. People tell me that that's what they notice, that he does that and he does it well. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repairs up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix. And not necessarily centrally located, but you diesel folks have been known to travel a long way to find good diesel people. And it's not a good idea to have somebody telling you that they can fix the cold start problem if they've never worked on a Chevy, Ford, or Dodge diesel before. That's just a bad idea. Anyway, when it comes to car repair, replacement of parts, you're at the mercy of the shop because the shop's going to use vendors that they use to provide parts. What's important for customers to understand is it's not a good idea for you to insist on a Motorcraft part or a Delco part or a Mopar part. Try to avoid that, and here's why. First of all, Chevy and Ford and Dodge and Honda and Toyota, they don't make their own parts. Someone makes their alternator, and that alternator goes into 20 different boxes with 20 different names. Leave that up to your shop. Leave you up to your shop. Just find out what the warranty is and just leave it up to the shop. I want to tell you, I don't know the last time I saw a really cheap and inexpensive electrical rotating device, whether it's a starter or an alternator. I think the bottom has gone away, and I think we're certainly in a really good area of parts and reconditioned parts, rebuilt parts. And believe it or not, in the industry, reconditioned and rebuilt are two different things. And then now we've got other names for them as well. The idea is it's either new or it's been rebuilt. That's all there is to it. And there's nothing wrong with rebuilt parts, because when we take a 7127 alternator, which is the GM alternator that's been around for 50 years, 7127 alternator, well, they upgraded the bearings, they upgraded the brushes, they upgraded the pulleys, and they also upgraded the insulation on the power terminal at the back of the case because it kept melting. So those were things that have happened over the last 20 or 30 years. So as this part comes out and as it goes bad, the rebuilders are going to see a pattern failure, and they know that they don't want to just send it back out with the same little nylon washer here, that there's something that needs to be done. If they wait long enough, sooner or later, the manufacturer of that will come out with a kit that helps us fix that particular problem. That happens a lot. And especially when we have computers now that we can put your VIN number in and check a variety of things. So the last six digits of your VIN number is the sequence number of your car as it came off the line, the assembly line. That's not really important. It's those other digits before that, the other 11 digits before that, that tells us what country it was made, where it was made, what the date of it was, what chassis, what transmission, which engine. It has all that information in it. And if you want to do that yourself, just go to Rock Auto, punch in your VIN number, and it'll tell you all about your car. So those are things that you need to be careful with. But again, just start with the symptoms. This is what it's doing, and this is how to make it happen. And if you want, I have time. If you want to have one of your technicians go with me, I can have him back here in 15 minutes, but I can show him how to make it happen. So I'll do it first, and I'll show him when I do this, this is what happens, and then I'll sit in the passenger seat, he can drive, and I'll teach him how to make it happen. And then that way it'll save us some money, save me some diagnostic money. So that might be hard at some of the larger independent shops and dealerships, but it's worth asking because it's going to be a money savings for the customer. And those of us that operate those auto repair shops, we understand that the miscommunication at the front counter is the root of many problems. And a lot of that time, it's our fault, not your fault. We didn't ask the right question. Otherwise, you have this noise, and you've explained the noise 10 times, but we haven't asked you, was the air conditioning on or off? How fast were you going when this noise happened? We had a lady that had a gas smell. And she just, that's all she said. It's just intermittently, it smells like gas. And do you ever see anything on the ground? Do you park it inside the garage? No, I don't see anything on the ground. No, I don't smell it when I get into the car in the morning, so forth and so on. And we just couldn't figure out the smell. And after the third time she came in, then we said, you know, can we have the keys to the trunk? Because we want to go in there, and that's the gas tank is underneath the trunk, and we want to look to see if anything's leaking back there. No, she says, no. So she leaves it again, and one of the guys doesn't understand that she'd refused to give us the keys, so he takes the back seat out, and with a long screwdriver, he opens up the latch. He opens up, and there's a gas can in the trunk of the car that's tipped over. It didn't have much gas in it, but that's the smell. So we know that all we have to do is just take that gas can out, clean up the trunk, let air it out, and be done with it. But we're scared now because we opened the trunk and she clearly didn't want us to. Well, we found a bag of underwear in the back of the trunk, and I would imagine she was going to take some of this underwear to Goodwill or something like that, or she was going to throw it away or whatever. That's the reason she probably didn't give us the key, but she didn't understand that the gas smell was coming from there. So what do you do then? Well, we fixed the gas smell. We got it all cleaned up. We got everything washed out and cleaned out. We put her underwear in the sack, back in it, and we just told her we can't find it. And she never came back. And so she knows, she probably knows we did find it. She probably knows we fixed it for free. But we just didn't know how to get out of the mess we were in by going into the trunk when she was explicitly said, I wasn't going to give you the keys. We asked her for the key at one time before. So those are the kinds of things that happen in the world of auto repair. The most important part of it is just the discussion between the front counter people, our people, and the customer who drives the car. Who's up?
Say hello to Cap.
Cap, good morning, Cap. How can I help you?
Hey, how you doing, Mark? Good to talk to you. My day doesn't start until I speak to you on a Saturday. So
okay.
I listen to your show all the time. I had a 97 Lincoln Mark 8, and it calls for a 3-speed fan, which when I got it, it didn't have that fan in there, so I put it in there, and I got the car started up and everything, and it was running, it was idling fine, it wasn't overheating, the temperature was good. Then I took it out on the road, and I drove it, and then all of a sudden, it started overheating on me, and I ended up getting it back to my home, and I checked the hoses, and both of the hoses, the upper hose and the lower hose, weren't hard at all. They were, like, soft.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering what I have to do to figure out what's going on as far as this overheat deal goes.
Okay.
And also, the oil was, like, red. I mean, the oil was, like, almost percolating. I couldn't even touch the – when I pulled the dipstick out just to check the oil, it was, like, hot as could be. I couldn't even touch it. It was that hot.
But the upper hoses, I mean, you could grab a hold of either the upper or the lower hose under these conditions, and you could hold on to them for 5 minutes, and they never got hot?
No, they weren't hard at all. There was nothing that was flowing through them.
Okay, well, Cap, I'm confused. How did you know it was overheating when you were driving it? Did the gauge tell you that, or did you smell something, or what? Walk me through that.
Well, when I stopped at a traffic light. When I stopped at a traffic light, all right, the temperature gauge went all the way up, and then the car started running very erratic, and then it stalled.
Oh.
I managed to get it started, and I ended up pulling it over to the side, and let it cool down. I checked the antifreeze, and you know, of course, you're not supposed to open up the radiator on, you know, this was the overflow.
Okay, so hold your thought right there. Hold your thought right there. We're going to come back to you in about 3 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. The lines are open. Cap has one. There's four open. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been around since 1970. Both Brian and Thelma are personal friends of my wife, Renee, and I. We know that they come from families of the gas stations, so both Brian's family and Thelma's family had gas stations in the 60s and the 70s and in the 80s. So these two young people really know what gasoline smells like, and they know how to fix cars. I'd like to have five shops in Mesa that I could refer you to, but I can't find five shops that pass the filter, Mark Salem filter. Not that they're bad. It's just that I want the crust. I want the top 10%. So Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and it's well worth your time if you're in Mesa. Cap, I need to ask you some questions, okay? So I just want you to answer the question. Don't just Cap, why did you put a fan on it at the very beginning?
The original person I bought the car from said it required a 3-speed fan, which it was not a 3-speed fan when he gave it to me.
Okay. All right, and then you put the 3-speed fan on it, and this is an electric fan that sits on the back side of the radiator, yes?
Yes.
Okay, and you get in and you drive your car, and you said it started overheating. What did you see that told you it was overheating?
The temperature gauge started rising.
And where did it rise to? Half, three-quarters, red zone, what?
Red zone.
Okay, so, all right, so it's in full-blown overheat at this point because it's in the red zone. And at that point, was the upper hose hot can be and really stiff? Did you open the cap? How did you get home? Did you just go ahead and drive it home?
Well, actually, I left it. And the next day, I left it in a place where nobody would bother it. And then the next day, I went and got it started. And I brought it to back home again.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Going to the hoses were very hot, but they were soft, and they should have been hard. And that was the upper and lower radiator hose. And plus, when I
Cap,
stopped the car,
we said that you're going to answer my questions. I'm not going to try to figure yours out. Cap, if the thermostat is locked up in that thing, then the one of those hoses is going to be rock hard and hot. There's no way you can have a needle in the red and have both of the upper and lower radiator hoses soft, pliable, pinchable, and cool. That ain't happening. It's not happening. So I'm confused about that. That's why I'm asking you, if you can say yes, no, or I don't know. But so you get it home somehow, the next morning you drive it home. When you get it home, tell me what you see underneath the hood. Are the hoses hot, or are they cold, or how does it run, or is it spitting water on the ground?
All right, Mark, they're hot, but they're soft.
So they're not firm?
No.
Okay, so you have no pressure in the cooling system at this point? Because
evidently not, no.
Okay, because when you get hot, the radiator cap's going to be a 12-pound cap. So it's going to hold 12 pounds. And so when you touch those hoses, and see, I can't help you. I mean, I just can't help you. You can't be in full-blown overheat and have a soft hose. You know what I mean? It ain't happening. It's just not going to happen. I've never seen it. Never in my life. And then you say you drove it home, and then when you got there, again, the hoses were cold, and then they were hard or cold and soft. Again, yes?
They were soft, but they were hot.
Okay.
And they should be hard. If there's antifreeze going through the hoses, they should be hard and hot. And they were soft and hot. So that's why I'm so confused. I don't know whether I got to do a water pump on the car, or I got to do the thermostat's not opening, or there's a clog in the system. I'm like, that's like, I don't know.
Okay. I can't help you. I just can't help you because what you say I've never seen before in my whole life. I've never seen anybody go into a full-blown overheat and tell me that the hoses are soft or that the hoses were cold or that the hoses weren't hard or they were. I mean, it's what you're saying doesn't make any sense. I'm sorry. I'm just not the one. I guess you need to take it someplace and have them. There is no way in God's green earth that the needle was in red. And in order for the needle to be in red, it has to be that there's coolant in the system.
1 minute.
There has to be coolant in the system. Otherwise, if coolant's not touching this temperature sending unit, then the temperature sending unit isn't talking to the dashboard. So we have to have coolant that's in dire temperatures in order for you to be in the red zone. And those hoses have to be as hot as hell when you touch them. It's called the handshake rule. If you grab a hold of one of the hoses, upper hoses or lower hoses, you grab a hold of them, you cannot hold on to it firmly like you shake a man's hand because it hurts so bad. And they're just as hard as a rock because it's in big time pressure. So it doesn't make any sense. You can't have it both ways, Cap. You can't have it both ways. It has to have, if it's an overheat, it has to be hot hoses. So I can't tell you if you need a water pump. It could be the cause of the overheat is the water pump. It could very well. It could be the fan. Anything that stops the circulation or stops the airflow across the radiator is going to cause the car to go into overheat. But I can't diagnose your car over the phone. Good luck to you, Cap. I'm sorry. I'm just confused beyond belief on where we're at with the car and the hoses and the heat and all that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're close to getting to the top of the show, but we've got two people that have called in. Jim, you're up first, and Steve, you stay right there. But Jim, how can I help you?
Yeah, good morning, Mark. Enjoy your show very much, even though there's no need for me to listen to it, but I'd listen to it anyway.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you.
Okay. Hey, look, I'm an old man with an old car, and I need some advice from you.
Okay.
I'm 83 years old, so I'm not lying. I am up in years. I've got an 02 Chevy Cavalier. It's a 20-year-old car. It's got 90,000 miles on it, and I only drive about 1,000 to 2,000 miles a year. So I don't put very many miles on it because there's no place for me to go anymore.
Okay.
Recently, my big issue here is that I drove the car home not too long ago. I hadn't driven it very far, so I'm not worried about it having overheated. But I went out next morning, and it had thrown up all over my driveway with coolant. So I've got a leak. I think everything is leaked out. It is leaking back. It's not the radiator. In other words, it's not leaking in the forward part of the engine compartment. It's coming out back where the transmission pan is and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But I think it's pretty much emptied the system.
Okay.
So I'm going to have to tow it. I'm afraid to drive it anywhere to a garage. I assume that you would recommend that I just tow it in.
Well, how far is the garage that you want to take it to, how far are they?
Well, is it fair for me to mention a couple garages that are close to me? Is that fair for you to comment, or do you like to do that?
I'm willing to do it because it's not going to hurt you any. I mean, I'll probably take some flack, but okay, I'm go ahead and
tell me. Well, I'll tell you what. There's three of them that are close to me. One's Kelly Clark, one's Greg Clark, and one's Kerry's Carricar.
Okay. Well, I know. You know, Kelly Clark is no longer alive. His widow Rita is, and Rita and I talked just yesterday. Greg is her son, so I'm going to pick Greg. And how far is he? Is he a mile or more or less?
I'm on 15th Avenue, and he's on 12th Street on Glendale. So it's a straight shot.
Okay,
maybe a mile and a half.
I tell you what, I think I would try. First of all, the default is yes, you're going to tow it to Greg's. And you're going to say, I got a coolant leak, call me with an estimate. That's what you're going to say. You got coolant all over the ground. But this is a way you could drive it. First of all, you're not going to drive it during the business hours. You're going to drive it there in the late afternoon or in the early morning. But you're going to take the radiator cap off, and you're going to fill it with water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to start it up and turn on the heater, and that's. Then you're going to put the cap on, and you're going to just click it once, but not twice. The first time keeps the cap on, but the second one then pressurizes the cooling system. I don't want
to. In this system, there, I can't get to the radiator cap. It's all covered over with metal appliances and stuff. But the only way I can add fluid is to the overflow coolant plastic gizmo that's
okay.
mounted high up in under the compartment.
Okay. There is a radiator cap. It's just hard to get to, and it's difficult to take off. There has to be a radiator cap on the radiator.
Yeah, but I don't have access to it.
No problem.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to tow it in. And yes, do you have AAA or do you have towing insurance or anything like that?
Oh, I think I have towing under my insurance.
Okay,
know.
So you just call their towing and say, come get it and take it to Greg's, and you call Greg and say, hey, I got coolant all over the ground. Would you? I suppose you're going to pressure test it to see where the coolant's leaking from, and would you call me with an estimate?
Now, are you talking about Greg Clark or Kelly Clark?
Either one of the two of them. They both came from Kelly. Greg is his son, and the other one was his manager for 100 years. Jesse, I think his name is. And Jesse's a great guy. They both have the same name, but Greg, the son, is running one, and then I think his name is Jesse. He's running the other one, and that was Kelly's number one man at the time.
Yeah,
so
Greg's place is easier for me to get to, and it's closer.
Yeah, no, call Greg. And then just tell him, I think Mark Salem's going to send me a discount coupon for 50% off.
Okay.
And just tell him that and laugh.
All right.
But
awesome.
I feel very comfortable that they will treat you fairly. Both Kelly Clark shops will treat you fairly and do a good job. And really, here's what's going to happen. We're going to open up the radiator cap. We're going to put a bunch of water in there. We're not even going to start the motor. We're going to put a pressure system on the radiator cap instead of the radiator cap. We're going to look at the cap. It's an 8-pound cap, 10-pound cap, 15-pound cap, whatever it is, 10-pound. And then we're going to pump that many pounds of air into the cooling system. We're not even starting the motor. Well, at that point, wherever the leak is at, it's going to start spraying water. And then we're going to look down and go, oh, that bypass hose is bad, or oh, look right there, or oh, look right there. That's all that's going to happen. That's the diagnostic, is just fill it up with water, pressure test it, look at the cap, and put that much pressure in it. So if it's a 12-pound cap, put 12 pounds of pressure in it, and the water will be spraying. This is not a difficult thing.
Can I put water in the thing and just drive it down to Greg's if it's only half a mile away?
Well, here's my problem with that. If the cap, if the system has been compromised, the cap is supposed to, as the coolant level drops inside the radiator, the cap is going to suck coolant from the overflow jug. So the cap has a valve on it that drops down and it sucks coolant in. Well, it's easier to suck air through the leak you have. So wherever that leaks at, it'll suck air, and I'm really afraid that we're going to cause damage to that motor not knowing where that leaks at. So under normal circumstances, if the engine compartment was airtight, yes, you could. You could just fill up the overflow jug and nurse it there. I'm just worried that that's not the case. I'm thinking you've got a compromise of the cooling system. It could be a freeze plug. It could be a bypass hose. It could be a thermostat housing. It could be a heater hose connection, an upper or lower hose connection. I don't think this is going to be a big dog. I think this is just going to be a find the leak and bid it and fix it.
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
Real quickly, just one. I know you're running short on time here. Would you take a chance on running something? This is 90,000 miles, 20-year-old car. Would you, at this point in time, flush the system with any kind of chemical flush, or just leave? Because I'd be afraid of causing leaks somewhere else. What's your feeling?
Well, when it came out on the ground, was it just a clear liquid that had a green hue to it?
Yeah, there was no green hue, but it was a clear liquid, and
water looking.
Watery looking. Yeah.
And it wasn't rusty. It wasn't black.
No.
Okay. Then.
No, there's a bit of crud in the overflow,
jug.
Coolant overflow thing. I can look down in there, and the bottom of that is sort of gooky. But,
okay. Well, I want to tell you something. The water that's on the ground came from the engine and the circulation system between the radiator and the engine.
Yep.
The overflow jug, we push coolant into there knowing we're going to suck it back out later. And all the heavy stuff's going to fall to the bottom. I don't think the bottom of it is representative of the rest of the engine, and I'll tell you why. Because if we had a bunch of rusty brown crap at the bottom of the overflow jug, then that would be the color of the fluid that came out of your car. And you said no. So I think that's good news. I think that's good news.
I could use some good news, believe me.
Yeah. So I think this is really a matter of tell the story as quickly as you could to him. Call me with an estimate. But I think that he's going to fix the coolant leak. Then he's going to mix a 50-50 mix of coolant, green and water, put it in. He's going to check your radiator cap, pressure test it to make sure that his leak is good, and that's it. That's going to
be. And one other super quick thing here. I just put new tires on the car very recently, and the mechanic came out of the garage to talk to me about this, and they printed it on the receipt. It says lug nuts and studs on the driver's side must be replaced before next service. Lug nuts, extremely difficult to torque on driver's side.
Okay. I would take that piece of paper along with me or put it on the dashboard and ask Craig to address it. I'd say, would you take a look at this? Now, what was the name of the company that told you that?
Walmart.
Okay. All right. What they're saying is a lot of the older cars had these chrome covers on the lug nuts, and they didn't actually fit the socket real well. So what happens is you, after banging the lug nuts on and off as we rotate the tires, we would take that chrome cover off, and at that point, the socket would be a little bit bigger because that chrome cover is gone. So this is a no big deal. It's good they said the nuts are bad, not the studs, because he's just going to put five new studs on there and be done with it. And if you want him to do them all, now today we don't use those chrome clad lug nuts. We use a solid chrome lug nut. So in your case, you might say, just replace all the lug nuts on all the four wheels.
All right, sir. Hey, Mark, you're an asset to our community.
Thank you. Not everybody agrees with you, but I'll take it from you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We got anybody else in queue?
Steve,
good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. It's Steve in Cave Creek, and I have an 04 Cadillac XLR with the North Star, and I've been getting across my enunciator panel, it keeps telling me to check the gas cap. And every time I check the gas cap, for some reason, it has backed off. So Cadillac wants $65 for a new gas cap, which the same gas cap through NAPA is like $23. So I'd use my common horse sense and went to Cadillac. Not really.
Don't.
But I put a new gas cap on, and I'm not getting that message across the enunciator panel. But what's happening now is after I fuel the vehicle, I'm getting a strong gasoline smell in my garage, and I'm afraid with my propane hot water heater tank, I'm going to blow the house off the foundation with the igniter of the hot water heater.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to figure out what's in that filler neck, or if that's something I can get to, or it needs to come out to Tempe
to
get that filler neck replaced.
No. This is two different issues. This is just two different issues. If the gas cap fixed the check engine light, we're done. We're done with that. Now you have a gas smell. So now raise your right hand. I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth. Okay? When you're filling up that thing, when you're filling up that thing, after it clicks off, how many more clicks do you give it? Answer A is one or two. Answer B is three or four. And answer C is, until I stop clicking. How many times?
How about D, all of the above?
Okay, all right. Stop stuffing the tank. That's where we have to start.
Okay.
Let's not spend a whole lot of money. The gas cap issue has nothing to do with anything else except for this. It's possible that we never really sucked the fumes off the tank because we were sucking them through the gas cap that wasn't sealing properly. So instead of sucking it through the vapor canister and getting the fumes and getting fresh air into the tank, we were bringing the fresh air through the cap. Put the new gas cap on. At this particular point, all I want you to do is don't stuff the tank, shut it off on first click, and I bet your problems go away. And it's not going to be related to the new gas cap or the filler neck, I can tell you that much. Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Yes, sir.
Good luck, Steve.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You
have it.
Bye-bye. See, folks, what happens is when you're driving down the road, we want to suck the fumes off your tank and send them up front and have the engine burn them. So we are constantly looking at the fumes inside the gas tank, and we have all these little gizmos and these little valves and these little solenoids that open and close. Now, we aren't going to suck a whole lot of vapor out of the tank when it's full when you're in city driving, because the gasoline's going to be sloshing all around in there and the tank is full, and we're going to suck liquid gas and we want the vapor out of the tank. So the car is going to know when to start sucking the vapor off the tank, and in order to suck the vapor out of the tank and move it forward into the engine, we have to have some clean air source inside to replace the vapor we're sucking. Otherwise, you can't suck on a straw with your finger on the end of the straw. When you suck on the straw, the finger can't be on the end of the straw. That's how it works. So we're just basically sucking the fumes at the appropriate time. We're sucking the fumes out of your gas tank and putting them into the front and giving them to the engine, because they are a good source of fuel. They are a good source of power. So instead of, in the old days, we had gas caps and we just vent all that fumes into the atmosphere. We don't do that anymore. So anyway, I'm Mark Salem. My email is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. My website is obviously marksalem.com. Lots of information in there about questions that I've gotten on the radio over the last 40 years. So we build FAQs as we go along, and the FAQs, I keep track of all the questions I have, and so then we'll make one, and I'm sure there's one in there right now about vapor, your vapor system and your recovery system, and those kinds of things. So mark@marksalem.com is my email, and my website is marksalem.com, and I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT.